This is Lake Effect for Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie Knorr. Thanks so much for tuning in today. As President Barack Obama begins his second term on Monday, taxes and the economy are sure to be key issues. At the end of the year, the country dodged the so-called fiscal cliff, but another round of debt ceiling talks looms in the near future. This national debate over taxes and spending echoes loudly here in Wisconsin as well. Governor Scott Walker is touring the state this week, in part to garner support for a middle-class income tax cut. This comes after he laid the groundwork for his taxation plans during his State of the State address on Tuesday. To better help us understand the latest tax issues, UWM economist Scott Druyanka and Marquette University political scientist John McAdams joined Lake Effect's Amy Kiley. Druyanka started by explaining whether the state income tax reductions might encourage household spending and help Wisconsin's economy.
The first question is, how much is it going to be cut? And it's not so clear to me there's a lot of room to cut very much, in which case it won't probably matter very much if it doesn't. If it does get cut, households would have a little more money in pocket. I did a little back-of-the-envelope calculation beforehand. It looks like the average person in Wisconsin pays about $1,000 in income tax per year. I assume most of that would still remain. So say another $100 or two in pocket. People would spend it, but I wouldn't think it would make a lot of difference.
In terms of the broader state economy impacting. And how do such state tax changes pose some of the same economic questions we heard during fiscal cliff negotiations?
Well, it's quite a bit different. The fiscal cliff is brought about by budgetary imbalance at the federal level. And you're not allowed to have a budgetary imbalance at the state level for the long run. We have a balanced budget. So it's that aspect of it is completely off limits. Again, we don't know a whole lot about what's going to happen with the state income tax. I guess the other thing you could say is the state income tax rate is much lower than the federal rate. And it's in addition to it, of course. But because of that, again, there's just only so much that can change.
The governor says he wants to get money to the middle class and small business owners. And in past political debates, the criteria for these terms has kind of created a sticking point. So, John McAdams, do you think that will prove true this time around?
First of all, we've got to see the proposal. States theoretically have to have a balanced budget. In fact, there are all kind of tricks you can play to get around that, at least for a while. Scott Walker, although different numbers show different things, Scott Walker does appear to have put Wisconsin in pretty decent financial shape, something like a more or less real balanced budget. Now, where is he going to find the money for any kind of significant tax reduction? I don't know. We'd have to see the details. I do have to point out another difference between state tax rates and federal tax rates. States are in competition with other states for things like business location or indeed even the location of individuals. A real reduction in tax rates, and again, I'm skeptical we'll get a substantial reduction, but a real reduction in tax rates might improve Wisconsin's competitive standing in attracting business, in attracting, people who want to come here with relatively high skill levels. Again, that only matters if we have an actual substantial reduction, and I'll be skeptical until I see the numbers.
And to follow up with you, Republicans, of course, control the state legislature and the governor's office, and Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is already signaling GOP support for an income tax cut. So will the governor's tax plan hit any political roadblocks? And if so, where might they come from?
I think the Republicans have the power in state government now. They control both houses of the legislature, and certainly Scott Walker is committed to passing such a policy. So I think something will pass. The question is what? And again, I think the key constraint is, where do you get the money? How do you have actual substantial, meaningful tax decreases without putting the state back in a deficit situation, back in a financial hole? So I wouldn't be surprised if we have a tax cut, but that it's largely cosmetic, that it's not particularly large, that it's kind of small. And it might assume economic growth that might or might not materialize.
You both have kind of mentioned spending somewhat now. Where would this money come from? Do either of you predict a change in spending for the state in order to fund a tax cut?
Well, that's an interesting question. In addition to the funding the tax cut, there's also increased expenditures on things like Medicaid. And that is a headwind if you want to cut spending. You can always cut anything, I suppose, but whether you want to is another question.
And what about you, Dr. McAdams?
Well, Walker's reforms of labor law and public sector labor in Wisconsin gained pretty substantial advantages, probably more for local school districts than for the state. I think that stream of revenue, that possibility of changing things, is now largely exhausted. That is, it's sort of been there, done that, can't do that anymore. So I am frankly at a loss to know where what could be cut or where the revenue would come from.
Dr. Drewyanka, Governor Walker also says he wants to keep property taxes low. Would that affect the state economy and household spending like income tax changes might?
I'm sure if people have more money to spend, they will spend it. On the other hand, I guess the question is how much do they wind up losing in terms of local services? They may care about such things. For instance, if schools get bad and I mean, it's not that clear, actually, on balance what the effect this would have, right? So if you lower the property tax, you'd think that's good. It's more money in pocket. It makes it cheaper to own property. On the other hand, if it means your school gets worse locally, people may not want to buy from you.
I think I should chime in that I'm really quite skeptical of what really are Keynesian models that say, let's put money in people's hands and they'll spend it, and therefore we will stimulate the economy. Government spending would stimulate the economy.
Then there is some recent evidence that people actually did spend money on some of these tax cuts. Somewhat surprising because the federal, like for instance, the payroll tax cut was designed to be temporary, billed as temporary. And in sort of the survey data, the consumers interpreted it as temporary so that they plan to only spend maybe 10% of what they saved in taxes. But in fact, they spent 30-40%. It's hard to say exactly what is happening, but one reasonable way of explaining that is that financial markets aren't quite what they have been. It's difficult to borrow money now, and this is a way to get your hands on some money in a sense, even if you're just sort of borrowing from yourself. You know, you could say that you expect the unemployment rate to be down around 4%, but the models before the stimulus were out were predicting 15 or 16% unemployment, and that didn't materialize.
The State of the State address we've been discussing is happening the same month as President Barack Obama's inauguration, and the president and Republicans are already talking about fiscal challenges. So, Dr. McAdams, as national leaders deal with these challenges, what are the odds the income tax agreements of the fiscal cliff negotiations will survive in the future?
You really have to look at the positions of the two sides, Barack Obama, who wants higher taxes, and the Republicans, who want lower taxes and lower spending. Obama, I think, has a big political advantage. He had a political advantage with the political cliff negotiations. I think he has a bigger advantage with the debt ceiling negotiations. The truth is, I was rather thinking it would be good to run off the fiscal cliff. It would increase taxes, it would reduce spending, and we would actually do something toward reducing the deficit, which it turns out we didn't to any substantial degree. On the other hand, failing to increase the debt limit means – it doesn't mean a default necessarily on bonds and securities of the federal government. They would be first in line to be paid. But at some point, that means somebody's checks, Social Security recipients, for example, or paying defense contractors would simply not be able to be written. I think in spite of what the Republicans are saying, they're pretty much going to have to cave on that. Here's the problem. It's pretty obvious what needs to be done. Federal spending needs to be decreased, and particularly in the area of entitlement reform. But that is extraordinarily hard to do because there are a lot of people who benefit from those entitlements that are pretty adamant that they don't want them touched. Even though I think Republicans would be willing to do that, a lot of Democrats – remember, Democrats control the Senate – are basically saying no cuts in entitlements. You cannot cut – cannot touch entitlements. So I don't really see a scenario where our current budget deficit is seriously addressed.
To cut spending dramatically or to raise taxes dramatically probably makes a very fragile economic recovery break. And that's the problem, is that there's just sort of conflicting goals depending on the time frame, and it's hard to wrap your head around that.
Hmm. And continuing with you, Dr. Dryanka, the Social Security payroll tax cut that didn't survive the fiscal cliff negotiations. Right. And what will that 2% increase starting this month, what kind of difference will it make for the economy and spending?
Well, for the average household, that's about $1,000. So it's $1,000 less that you can spend. On the other hand, this is reverting back to a tax rate that has prevailed for decades and prevailed up until 2009 or 2010. I wonder how much people are going to notice it. But, you know, it's a few hundred dollars less of consumption that can be done because of that. But that's the biggest tax most people pay, actually, is the Social Security tax.
Hmm.
And especially in the lower half of the income distribution, that is – that they're not paying a lot of income tax, but they are paying a lot of payroll tax. That's, and especially if you think, you know, that the employer's share is ultimately probably borne by the worker in the form of lower wages. So it's really like a 15% tax on wages that everybody who works pays up until, what, $113,000 or something.
So if that's the case, why did the Social Security tax change not seem to cause as much controversy as the Bush-era tax debate? It's like it slid by almost.
Why expiring?
Yeah, yeah, politically.
I think it's because people do view this as a contribution toward an insurance policy that's going to pay off when they're older.
And if Congress can't agree on taxes and spending, what about the executive branch? On the one hand, we heard the Treasury Department say it's not going to mint a trillion-dollar coin. Mm-hmm. But then President Obama just issued 23 executive actions for gun violence. So the question's kind of for you both. Dr. McAdams, do you see the executive branch taking action for the economy? And Dr. Dryanka, if the executive branch takes actions, what impact will that have on the economy and spending?
Well, Obama's done certain things by executive order that certainly Republicans and conservatives have objected to. Most of his executive orders about guns weren't that questionable. It was areas where federal bureaucrats clearly have discretion anyway. And if the federal bureaucrat has discretion, the government – I mean the president can give them orders as to how they'll exercise it. It would be a much more radical step to – somehow find a way to blow off the debt limit purely by executive action. I think that would create kind of a firestorm, probably create a lawsuit that would go all the way to the Supreme Court. Another reason why I think that won't happen is in spite of Republicans talking about using the debt limit to extort real spending cuts, I think Obama has such an advantage politically on that issue that he doesn't really have to do that. I think he can essentially get the Republicans to cave on that. So it would be pretty radical for the president to in effect blow off the whole idea of a debt ceiling, which has been around, if memory serves, I think from since 1939.
And what do you think? Any impact economically?
I do wonder what can be done this way. I mean, he certainly can't raise tax rates by executive order. And so then there's the question of balance. So you have this debt limit and you have spending, and one of the two will have to go. And I suppose there's possibly some choice about which route you take, but it's because you're posed with a logical problem that you've been told to spend money and then not given enough money to spend it and then told you can't borrow. So there's an algebraic problem there that somehow has to be resolved.
Dr. Scott Dryanka is an associate professor of economics at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Dr. John McAdams teaches political science at Marquette University. They spoke with Like Effect's Amy Kiley about the political and economic issues surrounding the proposed tax changes. Coming up after a break, what would-be college students should read into their ACT and PSAT scores. You're listening to Lake Effect on WUWM.